Not. He, indeed. Achyutam, the infallible Supreme Personality of Godhead. Prinayataha, satisfying. Bahu, much. Ayasaha, endeavor. Asura Atmajaha, O sons of demons. Atmatvat, because of being intimately related as the Supersoul. Sarvabhutadam, of all living entities. Siddhatvat, because of being established. Iha, in this world. Sarvataha, in all directions. In all times and from all angles of vision. Okay. Translation. My dear sons of demons, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Narayan, is the original Supersoul, the father of all living entities. Consequently, there are no impediments to pleasing him or worshiping him under any conditions, whether one be a child or an old man. The relationship between the living entities and the Supreme Personality of Godhead is always a fact, and therefore there is no difficulty in pleasing the Lord. So you can repeat. My dear sons of demons, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Narayan is the original Supersoul, the father of all living entities. Consequently, there are no impediments to pleasing him or worshiping him under any conditions, whether one be a child or an old man. The relationship between the living entities and the Supreme Personality of Godhead is always a fact. And therefore, there's no difficulty in pleasing the Lord. So, purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami, Srila Prabhupada, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. One may ask, one is certainly very attached to family life, but if one gives up family life to be attached to the service of the Lord, one must undergo the same endeavor and trouble. Therefore, what is the benefit of taking the trouble to engage in the service of the Lord? This is not a valid objection. The Lord asserts in the Bhagavad Gita, in the 14th chapter, text 4, Sarva yonishu kontiya murtiya sambhavanti aha tasam brahma mahad yonir aham vija prada pitaha. It should be understood that in all species of life, O son of Kunti, are made possible by birth in this material nature, and that I am the seed-giving father. The Supreme Lord Narayan is the seed-giving father of all living entities because the living entities are parts and parcels of the Supreme Lord Mamivamsa Jiva Loke Jiva Bhuta Sanatana. As there is no difficulty in establishing the intimate relationship between a father and son, there is no difficulty in reestablishing the natural intimate relationship between Narayana and the living entities. Swalpam apyasha dharmasha trayate mahato vayat. If one performs even very slight devotional service, Narayana is always ready to save one from the greatest danger. The definite example is Ajamil. Ajamil separated himself from the Supreme Personality of Godhead by performing many sinful activities and was condemned by Yamaraj to be very severely punished. But because at the time of death he chanted the name of Narayana, although he was calling not for the Supreme Lord Narayana, but for his son named Narayan, he was saved from the hands of Yamaraj. Therefore, pleasing Narayana does not require as much endeavor as pleasing one's family, community, and nation. We have seen important political leaders killed for a slight discrepancy in their behavior. Therefore, pleasing one's society, family, community, and nation is extremely difficult. Pleasing Narayana, however, is not at all difficult. It is very easy. One's duty is to revive one's relationship with Narayana. A slight endeavor in this direction will make the attempt successful, whereas one will never be successful in pleasing his so-called family, society, and nation, even if one endeavors to sacrifice his life. It's a heavy statement. The simple endeavor involved in the devotional service of Shravanam, Kirtanam, Vishnaho, hearing and chanting the holy name of the Lord, can make one successful in pleasing the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has therefore bestowed his blessings by saying, Puram Vijayate Sri Krishna Sankirtanam. All glories to Sri Krishna Sankirtan. If one wants to derive the actual benefit from this human form, he must take to the chanting of the holy name of the Lord. So, Naya chutam prinayato bhavya bhavayaso suratmajaha atmavat sarvabhutanam siratpadiha sarvataha. So, Om Ganat Vidandasha Gananjana Shalakaya Chakshur and Meditam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. Subhai Pumsam Paro Dharma Yato Bhakti Ad Hoksaje Ahoitaki Apratiyata Yatma Supersedate. So this is a very interesting verse. Subhai Pumsam Paro Dharma. It should be understood that the Supreme Dharma. Of course, Dharma means the constitutional, the word D actually, the prefix D in Dharma means that which sustains, that which cannot be separated from a particular object. So Savai, so that Dharma of the living entities, of course, is to be servant of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. That's Paro Dharma. Yato Bhakti Hoksaje. In terms of this particular verse today, Sabayapum Sambharadam Yadav Bhakti Hoksati Ahoituki Apretiyata Yayatma Supersedate Ahoituki, which basically means there's no cause. Apretiyata means it's not deterred in any circumstances. And that Yatma Supersedate, that's the only thing that can satisfy the self. So it's a very interesting verse from the Bhagavatam that pretty much corroborates this verse that we're reading today. In other words, there's no prerequisites or impediments in becoming Krishna conscious. One can be illiterate, one can be a man, one can be a woman. That's funny. One could be a malacha, one could be even an animal. I mean, Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu liberated dogs, two dogs actually. One dog when Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was a child, a little puppy, and another dog when Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was receiving the dog that was sheltered by Sivananda Sen. So in both cases, the dogs became liberated. In other words, what to speak of us? And so, what does that mean? We were discussing this the other day in terms of Srila Prabhupada's mission. And why was Srila Prabhupada successful? Whereas, this is a question that was raised the other day, not here, but it was raised in India. Why was Srila Prabhupada successful? This nice devotee, Prabal, was raising this question to me. Why was Srila Prabhupada successful, whereas his godbrothers really weren't successful? And because they had also gotten the order from their spiritual masters. Some of them had actually gone to the Western world. You have Ban Maharaj and some others who went to the Western world. And they remained, not in America, of course, but they were in Germany and the UK. And in UK there actually was one devotee maid, Vinod Vani, who was an old lady, and she was a sincere devotee. And then also in Germany there was one devotee who came back to Sriram Mayapur, and he took initiation from Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, and he remained a devotee and actually practiced Krishna consciousness. But the movement never really took off. And in fact, there's some indication that Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur was not so pleased with the disciples who came back from the West. And that's interesting too. And the indication is, what indicates that to me, is that Ban Maharaj, for example, he had a pledge of a donation to build a temple in London. That's, of course, in the UK, for those of you who don't know where London is. So he had a pledge to do that from one of the Maharajas. In those days, of course, Maharaj meant a king. Nowadays, Maharaj means a sannyasi. Actually, the Raj means king. Maha means great king. So it's interesting we use that term for sannyasis. But anyway, somehow or other we're using it. So we had a pledge of enough money to build a temple in London. That would have been amazing. And yet Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur told that Maharaj, don't give my disciple that money. Wow. So, you know, there's something that I'm not going to second guess and say exactly, you know, why he told him not to do it. But somehow or other, he wasn't able to build the temple. He wasn't successful. The devotees weren't successful in propagating Krishna consciousness in the Western world. One can take some hint on that by seeing who and how the devotees preached. How the devotees preached and who they preached to. Generally, they preached to so-called high-class people. We're not talking about real high-class people in terms of our Vedic understanding. In terms of Vedic understanding, high-class means Brahmin. And, you know, Kshatriya to a certain extent. And in the Western world, you basically everyone's Malacha. So, but they had this conception, let's preach to... Oh, there's Maha Mantra. Somehow or other. He's made it to Nugaloka. So anyway, so let's preach to, you know, the intelligentsia or preach to whatever. And there was one marquee, of course, the Jetland, as they say in the UK, who he said to one of the disciples of Bhakti, he said to Ban Maharaj, actually, I want to become a Brahmin. And Ban Maharaj replied to him, that if you want to become a Brahmin, you've got to follow four regulative principles. You know the famous story. The Prabhupada actually tells the story. You know, no meat, fish, or eggs, no intoxication, no illicit sex, and no gambling. And the Marquis of Jetland said, impossible. So it's quite interesting. So anyway, so they approached some of the so-called higher class people, and then they came back, and they were received. There's actually pictures of them being received back as great preachers of Krishna consciousness. But Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur never even talked to Ban Maharaj again in that lifetime. It's really interesting. Really interesting. He never talked to him again. Like I said, I'm not going to try to understand why. I can't understand the mind of a great personality. All right, so then fast forward. Then you have Prabhupada, who went to the Western world and sat down in Tompkins Square Park and really didn't distinguish who he was preaching to. This is the point. He preached to, I mean, what would be considered in India some of the lowest class animalistic people imaginable. I mean, there's stories of Prabhupada going into nudist colonies. Can you imagine? I mean, you know, for those of us in the West, you know, nudist colony, it's all right. But for someone from India, I mean, just like you have that story of Manigriva and Nalakuvara, who were cursed to become trees just because they happened to go in front of Narada Muni that happened. They didn't have enough sense to cover themselves in front of Narada Muni. Whereas you have Srila Prabhupada, you know, you contrast that. Srila Prabhupada going into a nudist colony and these people are walking around like that. Because Prabhupada did say they will become trees in the next life. It's somewhat like Narada Muni's appraisal of the situation. So, but Srila Prabhupada was very merciful. He was preaching to people. In fact, one of our leaders came in touch with one of the great leaders. It wasn't me, don't worry. He came in touch with Srila Prabhupada, one of the great leaders of the Krishna conscious movement, came in touch with Srila Prabhupada in a nudist colony. And he was living in the hollow of a tree in a nudist colony. So Prabhupada went there. Prabhupada lived with people who were keeping cat food or dog food in the refrigerator. And nowadays, of course, you know, we people, even devotees, initiated devotees, sometimes are keeping cat food and dog food in the refrigerator. I'm thinking nothing of it. But even Prabhupada's godbrothers criticized him. They said, well, they said he was successful because he liked associating with lower class people, you know, people who were us. I mean, we weren't like on the upper echelons of society politically or intellectually or anything like that. But Prabhupada, they criticized Prabhupada for that. But it's not that Prabhupada actually liked associating with low-class people, nor did he dislike it. Because Prabhupada was not identifying in terms of Varnashram Dharma. As mentioned here, Prabhupada actually was not into the... You know, here it's mentioned like family attachment. Okay. So let's extend that a little bit. Family attachment doesn't mean just like, you know, husband, wife, children, everything like that. It means community, basically. Because if you consider in India, if you talk to someone in India, they'll say, well, here's my cousin, here's my brother. And they're actually not their cousin or brother. They're actually just raised in the same village. Or they're friends. You know, just like they have these ceremonies where a girl will walk up to a boy and make him her brother, you know, there's this ceremony, which Prabhupada didn't like, actually. So there's this community consciousness, because here Prabhupada not only in the purport, let's go back to the purport here, Prabhupada is not just talking about families, talking about family, society, and nation. See in the last paragraph here. Whereas one will never be successful in pleasing his so-called family, society, and nation, even if one endeavors to sacrifice his life. In other words, if one identifies himself, not only works to please family, society, and nation, but identifies oneself in terms of one's family, society, or nation, which is very interesting. So that's not Krishna consciousness. So we actually saw that Srila Prabhupada was not identifying himself in terms of family, society, and nation at all. In other words, Prabhupada was seeing yastu sarvani bhutane atman ibanu pashati sarva bhuteshu chatmanam tatodna vigigushate. Prabhupada was seeing that everybody was the same family. I mean, Prabhupada really had the spiritual vision more, I mean, I'm not going to criticize his God, but more than anyone else, basically. That we're all connected to Krishna and that we're all brothers and sisters. So this is the point. When one becomes Krishna conscious, one's family conception expands. So even you have St. Francis, of course, who Prabhupada said was exhibiting perfect God consciousness by considering all the animals to be brothers and sisters. And so Prabhupada exhibited that, and because of that, he was able to preach Krishna consciousness. And it's not that just preaching, you know, Prabhupada's godbrothers were very expert in preaching. They knew Sanskrit, sometimes even better than Prabhupada. They knew Sanskrit. But because Prabhupada did not have this limited Kripana family, nation, society consciousness, he was able to be affectionate to them. And if you talk to the devotees, why they joined, it was because the philosophy, to a certain extent, but it was Prabhupada's affectionate relationships with the devotees. And you can only be affectionate with someone who you love. And you know, so it was Prabhupada's love for us. You understand the point? Because there was no impediments to that love because of this limited bodily consciousness, which I'm surmising that some of his godbrothers had. You know, none of it, there's no incidents or no recollection of any of his godbrothers who went to the West or just hanging out with lower class people. You know, in society, considered low class people. Whereas Prabhupada, he just like, he didn't care. Dina hina yata chilo, harinam udarilo. And Prabhupada did something, I was talking about this during Prabhupada's Vyasa Puja. Some of you heard my talk at the Prabhupada's palace. Prabhupada did something very unique, even so far as his installation of deities. That we see that Prabhupada very much emphasized the installation of Gaura-Nitai deities. Whereas his godbrothers, and even in the Gaudiya Mathamam Bhakti, Sananta Saraswati Thakur was present, 99% of the deities that were installed were Gaura-Gadadhara deities. And yeah, Radhakrishna and Gaura-Gadadhara deities. But it was usually Gaura-Gadadhara, Radhakrishna and Chaitanya. And it's very, except where they installed Panchatattva. But there's very, so I can't even think of an instance where Gaura-Nitai was installed in the temple without Radha and Krishna, without the rest of the members of the Panchatattva in the Gaudiya Math temple. And so Prabhupada, he also understood that it was necessary to invoke the mercy of Lord Nityananda. Heno Nitai Vinay Bhai Radha Krishna Poitinai, as Narottama Das Thakur states. That without the mercy of Lord Nityananda, one cannot understand Radha Krishna Poitinai, cannot understand Radha and Krishna, or cannot approach Radha and Krishna. So Prabhupada understood, you know, Lord Nityananda. And Lord Nityananda, what did he do? He approached Jagai and Madais. So Prabhupada was very much in the mood of Lord Nityananda. He had Lord Nityananda's mercy. And also, he understood his spiritual master's mission, Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Paschachateja Tarni, that to counteract these tendencies for impersonalism and voidism. And it's interesting, when Prabhupada first came to this country, he started, you know, he was preaching very heavy against impersonalism and voidism. And the devotees, they didn't really understand what that meant. The devotees were thinking, oh, that's just some sadhus in India, you know, like Mayavadis, you know. It's actually quite interesting that they didn't relate that to themselves or to America. They thought, you know, it's interesting, you know, Prabhupada or Swamiji at that particular point is referring to all these interesting characters in India, you know, like the Nagababas and other people like that. And then it took devotees a few years to understand that their whole culture and their whole consciousness was just like completely absorbed in impersonalism and voidism. I mean, even the religions, how God is depicted or not depicted, that God is just energy, and all these yoga schools, I mean, even nowadays, especially nowadays, are becoming more prominent in personalism and voidism. You know, Buddhism is becoming extremely popular, I guess to a certain extent, because when you get into quantum mechanics and science, there's some connection with Buddhism. You know, people feel very much connected, especially quantum mechanics, and I'm not going to describe why. So there's voidism in the Buddhist philosophy and impersonalism and even the portrayal of Indian philosophy is basically Shankara's philosophy rather than Vaishnavism. I mean, if you go to a university and you ask about Hinduism or the philosophy behind Hinduism, it's practically 99% impersonalism that's being depicted. And that's quite interesting because if you're going to discuss impersonalism versus personalism, there should be a debate or discussion to try to ascertain which one is better, and there should be some judge like that. But they just like naturally push forward this impersonalism. So Prabhupada took up this mission like to attack the impersonalism and voidism in the Western world, and actually treated all the Westerners just like his children. I mean, Prabhupada was so affectionate to all of us. I mean, Prabhupada was even teaching the ladies how to put on saris. And Prabhupada also didn't distinguish between the men and the women insofar as engaging them in Krishna consciousness. And he was also criticized for that by his godbrothers, because in the Gaudiya Math, in all the Gaudiya Math, there's no women living in the temple. I mean, the women, the only time they're enthusiastic about having the women come is during Gaur Purnima, when the old ladies can give some nice donations to the temple. But otherwise, and even in India today, I mean, it's quite interesting, like this discrimination against women. I was discussing this insofar as our establishment of the temple in Govardhan, because many of you may know that the temple is like half constructed now. So I was talking to some of the devotees. I said, well, I'd like to have some women pujaris and things like that. And they said, no one will ever accept this. And they said, well, they can dress the deities behind closed curtains, but not in front of... And Prabhupada, when he was doing... You know, they say this, but when Prabhupada was doing the pandals in Delhi, in Calcutta, in Mumbai, which was Bombay in those days, Prabhupada had the women giving the class, doing the artis in front of everybody else. I mean, somehow or other, as they're saying, you know, we've actually become more religious than the Pope in ISKCON. You understand? More religious than the Pope. You know, more strict and conservative than Prabhupada was. Prabhupada understood how to apply Krishna consciousness. So, and Prabhupada personally understood that there was no impediment, that if you get someone chanting Hare Krishna, and Prabhupada had faith in the holy name, that's another point, that if you get someone chanting Hare Krishna, it doesn't matter who they are. And Prabhupada makes that point here. If one wants to derive actual benefit from this human form, he must take to the chanting the holy name of the Lord. So Prabhupada just got people in Tompkins Square Park chanting. Actually, Prabhupada's mission didn't take off until he got people chanting. Even though Prabhupada was giving classes before in this Mayavadi ashram, some of them were upstate New York and things like that, but people really started to follow Prabhupada when he got people chanting, because then their consciousness became changed at that particular point. So that if one wants to derive the actual benefit from the human form of life, he must take to the chanting the holy name of the Lord. So that's the real point. He had faith in the holy names. That's another reason Prabhupada was successful. He understood that if people just chanted, their consciousness would change. And of course, there's many historical stories about this. There's a lot of evidence about this. There's Valmiki Muni, who was a dacoit before. One of the worst dacoits, or gundas, as they say in India. And he just chanted the names of Ram by accident when he was chanting Mara, 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 Mara. There's the prostitute in Haridas Thakur, right? Who was just chanting in imitation. Even she had ill intention. There was Dhruva Maharaj, who simply wanted something material. I mean, there's so many stories. And of course, Prabhupada here in the purport cites the story of Ajamil, who was indicating his son Narayan. Unfortunately, Ajamil was going on having children until he was in the ripe old age, you know, getting ready to kick the bucket. You know, there's a time and place for everything. One should not be having children when they're 80 years old. So anyway, Prabhupada really understood the essence that no matter Dina, and that's also Lord Nityananda, Dina Hina Yata Chilo Hani Namu Durila, that if someone simply hears the holy names, it doesn't matter, fallen, elevated, then he will actually become Krishna conscious. He will actually become purified. Whereas Prabhupada's godbrothers, generally they were lecturing so much. And it wasn't the lectures that made the devotees. It was Prabhupada's two things: faith in the holy name and his understanding that they're all parts and parcels of Krishna. They're all worthy of affection. They're all his family members, not just his... Prabhupada had experience, of course, interesting. Prabhupada had experience in his own family, how he wasn't able to please him, because a lot of this purport here indicates Prabhupada's own background. You have to understand there's a lot of Prabhupada's psychology built into the purport, where Prabhupada says one will never be successful in pleasing one's so-called family. Prabhupada is speaking from direct experience there. He tried his best to please his family, and his family just like treated him very badly. So Krishna arranges that also for devotees. You know, when one tries to please something or someone that is counterproductive to Krishna consciousness, Krishna actually smashes one. Yashaha madhugrinami harishe tadanam shanai. So anyway, so Prabhupada is speaking by experience. So he understood all these points, that if you simply, shraddha shabde visha shakahe sudrita nishya, that simple faith, that if one simply presents the Krishna consciousness movement, the holy names, simply presents or interacts with people as parts and parcels of Krishna, regardless of their situation, you'll be successful. And that's the trick. That's the reason Prabhupada was successful. Other devotees had the same order that Srila Prabhupada had to preach in the Western world or preach in English like that. But Prabhupada had the realization of the holy name and the family situation, that all living entities are part of the same family. So anyway, so this is the point. So any questions or comments about these points? Yes. Yeah.
And then after he forgave them, he also told all the devotees that you shouldn't bring up his past.
Yes.
That to bring up, if someone surrendered completely, to bring up their past and the gossip about it is actually
offensive.
And then that person who does that bringing up of the past, that they actually will receive some of the karma.
Yeah. Well, Bhaktivinoda Thakur, when talking about offenses against the holy name, or specifically the first offense of offending the Vaishnavas, he mentions talking about a Vaishnava's past, talking about, present manifestations of his past karma. Let's say if someone is ugly, of course you never want to say a Vaishnava is ugly, or someone's sick, or someone has some legal problems, or something like that. To criticize a Vaishnava for any of those things, or even for an accidental slip. Accidental means not something that goes on for year after year, but a slip, like, somehow or other one goes into the movies and watches Star Wars or something. That's not really a fall down, I'm just teasing. But some slip, little slip. Let's say you're going to the university and preaching and someone's smoking marijuana and they hand you a marijuana cigarette and you don't inhale. But anyway, so... like Bill Clinton. So, a little slip like that, accidentally means non-premeditated. You shouldn't criticize a Vaishnava for that. And even if a Vaishnava falls down and picks himself up, you don't think about best. I remember there was one Vaishnava who passed away recently, not from here, but from somewhere else. And then it was in Fiji. And then some of the devotees were criticizing him after he passed away. It was horrendous. I mean, sure, I understand he had issues and, people had issues with him, but you don't criticize a Vaishnava, especially after they pass away. That's the wrong thing. So you have to be careful about that.
How
yeah.
Can we develop a culture that there seems to be so much of that, like a lack of forgiveness, you know, and in relationship to other devotees? Maybe something happened in someone's past, and but then you can see that, you know, they change or they gratify their life. But then people feel inclined that they have to tell everybody else, well, this is what this person did 20 years ago.
He was without sin. Let him throw the first stone. You know, this, and I'm finding fault in others because I myself am pockmarked with the same faults. So somehow or other it makes us feel better to push people, other people down, because we are ourselves have many faults. But look at what Jagai and Madai did. I mean, what they did, there's no comparison with what anyone has done in the movement. It's described that their sins were so unlimited that even Yamaraj and Chitragupta, his scribe, couldn't come to an end. His scribe was having like carpal tunnel syndrome from trying to write down, you know, or type on his computer about all their sins. And yet they were forgiven. They became great devotees. We worship them. Okay, on that happy note...